So, our new percussionist, first time ever, Ryan Legueux. Hey, come on up.
Yeah. Every time.
So, Nikki Neely, so excited for her. Where'd she run to? Oh, up in class. I was going to have her out here. What really impacted her, if you sit down and talk with her, I want her to hear this so she would say this, was her year in children's ministry. I really don't know if that's true, but we're going to go with that. Because she's supposed to hear that. Hey, Ryan, send Nikki out. Because that was my children's ministry plug. We're going to start talking to many of you, personally talking to you about children's ministry and helping out. And thought a lot about it and different things about that, but we are going to need more and more teachers. A lot of you have served for many years, but we discussed you having a year off, and so we're coming back. So get your shoulder ready, because we're going to be tapping it and needing volunteers starting August 1st in that. So, you know, last time I was up here, Curtis goes, "Man, you're so intense." I was like, "Okay." Kay Neiman says, "Man, you're so funny." I come up here, my wife just hopes I don't embarrass her, which will not happen. I really do enjoy it. But I gotta admit, I'm a little intimidated this time. Because if you think about the guest members that from Cornerstone that have spoken, Tim Kinsey in the past came up here, made us all laugh, and then just dug the knife in and convicted us through humor. And then Kenson, last time, people are still talking about the family and the family ministry and from his message. And Robert Lingle took us deep, deep into Abraham. And then Steve Gooch always comes up here and just has a certain way to connect with people. And then most recently, Hamilton comes up here and just challenges, convicts us, inspires us, takes us to new levels, and we're so refreshed. And then Fenton every week does a great job, and so now I come up here after all that pressure. But I'm thinking this podium is Holy Spirit possessed, and I'm hoping that will happen today. 1 Corinthians 2 talks about Paul, and he says, "I don't come to you with wise and persuasive." And what he talks about, for me, is that it's not about him, but it's about God. And so it is my hope and prayer that I'll come up here and stumble, say words, stumble over this, trip, whatever, but then God would come through, and you'd walk away and say, "Wow, God's really moved." Because I know I can't do this. But in fact, my first speech in college, and I'm a speech major, I walked off and said, "I can't do this. Fail me. I quit." So, Carly's dad. Doesn't need a name. Carly's dad. Great job. I was talking with a young lady this week and say there's no powerful word, no more powerful word in the English language than daddy. And I don't care how old a female you are, if you're from the South, you get that. Because it may be dad, pop, whatever, but when you really want something, it's daddy. And there was a discussion on Mother's Day of which child I favor the most. Not, I treat them all the same. And the kids were like, "No, Alyssa." Which, by the way, my daughter and son and his wife and my whole cheering section's over there. I'm thrilled to have them there. But, yeah, all Alyssa needs to say is daddy, and it's, you know, she can have anything she wants. A few weeks ago, Fenton got up here, and he read the faith scripture I wanted to. And it talks about Jacob and Esau were blessed in the future by God. Or blessed, their future was blessed by God. And our men of faith. And I'm like, no, don't do that. I'm going to talk about Jacob and Esau. And he skipped it, and so I'm in good shape. We have slides. I have to say slide one from time to time. Jacob and Esau. This, I normally don't have a title to the sermon. There is one today. And the title is, Esau Did Nothing Wrong. Esau did nothing wrong. Look in Genesis chapter 25. By the way, I have 12 chapters of the Bible, plus another book, plus two other scriptures, and a video, all to get done in 30 minutes. Yeah, exactly. And see, the hard thing is when people go long, we in the children's ministry are like, come on, don't they know better? So I can't be a hypocrite today. Cross my fingers and forgive me. Verse 19, it says, this is the account of Abraham's son, Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Padan Aram, and sister of Laban, the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. Then the Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled with each other within her, and she said, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was hairy, like a hairy garment, so they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to him. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man, staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. That is why he was called Edom. Jacob replied, first, sell me your birthright. Look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is my birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear to me first, for he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank, and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. So here you have the two boys, Esau and Jacob. Esau was the first. He was to get, per tradition, the birthright. And then Jacob was the second. Esau was a father's dream. He was a man's man. He was the quarterback. He was hairy. He loved to fish. He loved to game hunt. I mean, dad and he could go out. They could sit at the table and burp together and fart. I mean, he was the man's man. He was so excited about Esau. I was going to, by the way, my grandchildren are here today. I was going to show them off. They're off in class. But I have one that's red-haired and hairy. And so he's my Esau. I mean, Esau was what every man dreams. And then Jacob. Jacob was a mama's boy. He loved to stay home and cook. He loved just to hang out with mom. He was a liar. He was deceitful. He was a manipulator. He was self-centered. He was materialistic. You had Esau, and you had Jacob. And yet, who was picked to lead the families? It was Jacob. Why? Esau did nothing wrong except one thing. He gave away his birthright. You know, in our relationship with God, in our time with God, in what God really wants from us, he just wants us to own what he gives us, the things he's entrusted to us. And it's today as we have Father's Day. Today as we look at this, men have given up what God has entrusted to him, and men have gone away from being fathers. God only wants one thing out of us, fathers. That's to be fathers. And yet so many times it's been given away. Go to the next slide. Read this. Tonight, about 40% of children in the Western world will go to sleep in homes in which their fathers do not live. Before they reach the age of 18, more than half of our nation's children are likely to spend at least a significant portion of their childhoods living apart from their fathers. Never before in this country have so many children been voluntarily abandoned by their fathers. Never before have so many children grown up without knowing what it means to have a father. Fatherlessness is the most harmful demographic trend of this generation. It is the leading cause of declining child and adult well-being in our society. It is also the engine driving our most urgent social problems. If this trend continues, fatherlessness is likely to change the shape of our society. Somebody quoted in one of the sermons recently that in teenagers, alcohol abuse and drug abuse is down, and yet depression and suicide and abusing themselves is up. Go to the next slide. Five times fatherlessness, what has it caused? Five times the average suicide rate. It's dramatically increased rates of depression and anxiety. 32 times the average rate of incarceration. Decreased education levels and increased dropout rates. Consistently lower average income levels. Lower job security. Increased rates of divorce and relationship issues. Substantially increased rates of substance abuse and increases in social and mental behavior issues. Our society has taken the very thing that God's entrusted us with, fatherhood, and we've given it away for a bowl of stew. It is never too late to own the responsibility God has entrusted with you. It's never too late. Fathers, wherever you are today in your relationship with your kids, it's never too late to go back and be the father that they really need. And they don't need my money, and they don't need, you know, my possessions, and what they need is me being a father and a support. It's never too late. What was the one thing Esau gave up? What was the one thing that caused him all the strife? He sold his birthright. Well, the story goes on, and if you flip a page, what happens is we now see Jacob and his whole element. He is a liar. He is deceitful. He's materialistic. And the mom is a manipulator. And she doesn't want Esau to get this birthright. He doesn't want Esau to get the blessing. And so they run this whole big scam going on. And Isaac's about ready to die. And he says, I really want some wild game. Esau, go get me some wild game. And Esau's all excited, and he takes off, and he's going to go do what his father wants him to do. And he's out hunting and getting it. And mom says, Jacob, come here. Let me put some hair on you. Let me stink you up a little bit. Here, take this food into your dad. He'll think you're Esau, and you can get his blessing. And we will box out Esau, and you will be the ruler of this family. You will get the blessing of this family. And so they go off and they do that. Esau comes home and he hears Isaac going, boy, this doesn't seem right. Well, I guess that's what they say. Okay, here's the blessing. I'm giving you the blessing. This is yours. And Esau knows it's his and he's going, oh my goodness, what's going on? And he finds out that Jacob is now not only stolen his birthright, but stolen his blessing. And that Esau no longer is the one to get the blessing of the family and to be the one to run the family. So Esau is infuriated. He's truly upset and very mad. It says in verse 18, it says, he went to his father and said, my father. Yes, my son, he answered. Who is it? Jacob said to his father, I'm Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and get some of my game so that you may give me your blessing. Isaac asked his son, How did you find it so quickly, my son? The Lord your God gave me success, he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not. Jacob went close to his father, who touched him and said, The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him. Are you really my son, Esau asked? He said, I am. Then he said, My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing. And he did that. Verse 34, it says, When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, Bless me too, my father. But he said, Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing. Esau said, Isn't it he rightly named Jacob? He has deceived me these two times. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing. And he said, But haven't you reserved any blessing for me? Verse 41, it said, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. And he said to himself, The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I'll kill my brother Jacob. So now Esau has been completely run over by Jacob's deceitfulness. And what happens is the mother says, Jacob, you better get out of here. And he takes off and runs. And then he takes off and he's going to his uncle Laban. And Laban isn't much better than his sister and isn't much better than Jacob. He isn't a manipulator. But on Jacob's way, in verse 10 of chapter 28, it says, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and east, to the north and the south. All peoples on my earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what you have promised. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, How awesome is this place? So Jacob takes off. He stops for the night. He has this dream, and he sees Stairway to Heaven, and she's buying a... He sees this ladder, this stairway. It's a connection between he and God. It's a connection between earth and heaven. And he's sleeping there. And God says, I'm going to bless you like nobody's ever been blessed. What hit me today is, what were the blessings? Well, it's descendants. The most important thing for me today is family and relationships. The most important thing that God always blessed Abraham, Isaac, Jacob with, he would say, was descendants. No matter where your time is today, what is the most important thing you have? It's your family. And it's your friends. And God says, I'm going to bless you and your descendants. I'm going to bless you. You're going to have so many. And I underlined this. So he woke up and he said, Wow, God's in this place, but I wasn't aware of it. And he was afraid and said, Just hold on to that for a little bit. Because Jacob is so hilarious. No matter whenever God comes to him, he's always going back to God in fear and faithlessness, and always going back to get more. And then at the very end of the story, it just hits me so funny. It says in verse 20, Then Jacob made a vow saying, God, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking, will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God, and the stone that I will set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So God says, I'm going to bless you. You're going to be so blessed. You're going to have so much. And what's Jacob say? I'll give you a tenth. It just it continues to show me where Jacob's at. I mean, today, and I'm not criticizing contribution and a tenth and what you give, but here's a man that's been given the lottery, and he says, okay, I'll give you a tenth, God. Where's his heart? Where's Jacob at? As we see this, and he says that, it is never too late. It is never too late to see the heaven of God, the glory of God, the promise of God. And my second side point as we're working this way, it is never too late. I don't care what you've done, where you've been. Look where Jacob's been. And we do understand that Jacob eventually becomes the father of all Israel, the father of all Jerusalem, the father of the Jewish nation, and thus the father of Christianity. I mean, we're here because of Jacob. But here's a guy that's been blessed so much by God, and he says, I'll give you a tenth. I'll give you a half, whatever. God is wanting us to see the heavens. I love those songs, by the way, today, Byron. I know we didn't quite sing them, but if we'll keep practicing. I mean, talking about singing the glory of God. It's just the glory of God. It is never too late to experience the glory of God. I don't care what sin you've done. I don't care what action has happened. I don't care where you've been in life. That was yesterday. But today, God wants to make a connection between you and heaven. He wants you to see the glory of God. He wants to open your eyes up. He wants you to see the very presence of God. He wanted Jacob to see it, and Jacob even saw it. He became afraid. It is never too late, no matter what you've done, to see the glory of God. So then the story goes on. He goes and spends his time with Laban. Can't even get to that point. And he spends the years with Laban. And then he decides it's time to leave Laban, and he takes off and brings all his family in the night, shoots off all of his possessions, everything. And he's going to go see his brother Esau. But on his way to see his brother Esau, look at chapter 32 in verse 22. Another part of the study that just floored me on this. We talk about, and we just talked about in the last few weeks, about wrestling with God. And all these years, and I don't want to take away what we talk. We need to wrestle with God like Jacob. Jacob really wrestled with God. He got down and prayed with God, and he wrestled with God, and he saw God, which is all very true. But the question I never had asked is why? Why did he wrestle with God? Well, what was happening was he was out on the wilderness, and he was moving that way. And all of a sudden, he heard who was going to come meet him. Esau. And why did he think Esau was coming to meet him? To kill him. It's time to die. Esau is coming after me. And so what he does is he splits up his tribes in two portions. He sends out Leah, the one with weak eyes. We know what that means. And she goes first, and he puts them up in the front line. Then he takes the other half and puts them with Rachel, and then he goes across the stream by himself. He runs away. So if they wipe out Leah's tribe, I still got Rachel. And if they wipe out Rachel's tribe, I'm still alive. That's his thinking. And so he goes over a stream. If you're about to die, what do you think you're going to do? Most of you are going to pray. And do you think you're going to get much sleep? Has anybody in here had a restless night where you just couldn't sleep? Something was on your mind? Right? And you want to go to sleep, and that thing keeps popping up. Maybe something's happening tomorrow and you're scared half to death. You're about to go see the judge. You don't know. You're staying up all night. Why does Jacob stay up all night praying? Because he's scared half to death for his life. And he can't sleep. So I do appreciate and understand me. Yeah, you know, him staying up all night and praying and him wrestling with God. But even at this point, I'm still not giving him a lot of credit, this big righteous dude. Because he is just there in the fear of his life, and he's put everything he loves in front of them and puts himself in bed. And so, in verse 22, it says, that night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jordan. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that the hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." And what does Jacob say? "I'm not letting you go until you give me something." Even now he's wrestled online prayer. He's about ready to die. His name's about ready to be. Well, you better give me something. The man asked him, "What's your name?" "Jacob." He said, then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men, and you have overcome." When Jesus went to the garden, this is a key scripture. When Jesus went to the garden, how many times did it say he went and prayed? Three, right? He went down, he prayed. He got up. Then he went down and prayed, says, "God, take this away from me. But not your will, my will." He got up, third time. "Dear God, take this away from me." And then he said he got up and basically says he was resolved. He said, he got up and said, let me go see my betrayers. He was resolved in prayer. Part of my problem when I pray, and a lot on my mind, is I pray anxiously. So I can stay up, pray. "Dear God, help me. Dear God, help me. Dear God, help me. Dear God, help me. Oh, please, God, help me." Over and over and over and over again. And that's what Jacob did all night. But at some point in Jacob's time, it said he overcame. He prayed and he overcame. Understand, when Jesus prayed his third time, he overcame. He was resolved. God's will be done. He stood up and he went on his way. When we pray, we've got to come to a prayer of faith in a time that we have overcome. We've put it to bed. And we've said, "God, I'm done with it." Doesn't mean we don't pray about it anymore, but we don't worry about it anymore. The anxiety is gone. We've given it to God. Your will be done. And I really wish that we could pray and immediately things would happen. But we've even got a situation in our life going on right now. And I prayed, "God, by Memorial Day, answer that prayer." He didn't answer. I mean, he answered it. It just hasn't happened like I wanted. I know he's answered it. "God, by next week. God, by next week." I don't know. Today was, "God, you know, and this is what I want, but your will be done. I'm done with it." We've got to pray to a point of faith. We've got to come to a place of faith in our prayers. So all those are sub-points. I really only have one point today, so now to the point. All right, so here Jacob is, you know, they're about ready. Esau's coming in with all his men. He's going to wipe out everything. Jacob is thinking, "Okay, I'm going to buy him off." I think so many times I've done things wrong, and I think I'll just give a present to get it right. I was thinking, Cindy will remember this, time in St. Louis, my mom and dad had come in and worked, and I didn't spend a lot of time with them, and I felt bad, so I ran off and bought them sweatshirts. And mom was like, "I don't want sweatshirts." Jacob was ready to buy him off. He said, "Let's get the best of this, and this, we're going to send this many cattle, and this many sheep, and this, we're going to give it. Understand, Esau was super rich at the time. And he brought all the stuff, and Esau said, "I don't want this." And basically says, "I just want to be brothers." And Jacob says, "No, take it. He says, "I don't want this. I got more than that. I got plenty." But eventually Esau takes it. And then Esau, and they're hanging out. And Esau says, "Tell me about your families." And, you know, Jacob's like, "He's not going to kill me. Tell me about your wives, your kids. Talk to me." And they're hanging out. And then Esau says, "Let's go to Seir together. Let's take everybody there. I got everything worked out. Let's just, you and I'll spend that, you know, we'll have a road trip together. We'll all hang out. Awesome. We're brothers. We're doing this again." Esau did nothing wrong. Understand, at this point in time, Esau's done nothing wrong. And Jacob goes, "Why don't you go ahead taking these cattle's kind of tough. I'll stay back and I'll meet you there. You go ahead. Brother, love you. We're awesome together. You just go ahead. I'll meet you there. Does Jacob meet him there? He takes off. Jacob goes the other way. What did Esau do wrong? Nothing. Esau did nothing wrong. A few weeks ago, something was put on my heart. It's forgiveness. Look for, you won't find it, possibly, but the book of Obadiah. I marked it. Trick that I learned. The book of Obadiah. I love the minor prophets. The book of Obadiah is a 2-page book written by the prophet Obadiah, who he was writing to the Edomites. And basically he's saying, Edomites, you are arrogant, you're full of yourself, you don't think I can deal with you, you're headstrong, you're prideful, and I'm going to wipe you out if you don't turn it around. Does anybody know who the Edomites were? The descendants of Esau. They were the descendants of Esau. Obadiah was about 1,400 years after Jacob and Esau. 1,400 years. The descendants of Esau were still holding a grudge 1,400 years. The Edomites were one of the biggest enemies of Jerusalem. They had plundered Jerusalem 4 times. The people hated Jerusalem. They hated the Israelites. They're the bitter enemies of them. And this is 1,400 years after Esau and Jacob. They were still holding a grudge. John the Baptist was killed by Herodias. And Mark, it says, she longed for his death because she nursed a grudge. Why was John the Baptist beheaded? Because somebody nursed a grudge. What happened? Why was Obadiah preaching to the Edomites? Because after 1,400 years, they were still nursing a grudge. And in fact, the Edomites, after this story, were destroyed. Nursing a grudge. I've been very blessed with family, but I do know there's hurt relationships in families. I know some of you have gone through brutal times with fathers, mothers. They have hurt you. They've abused you. And I do not, by any means, want to make light of that. But what I do want us to think about is who is still being hurt by that abuse. It's you. Esau did nothing wrong, but because of what happened in Jacob's sinfulness, and because they never dealt with it, the Edomites were wiped out. A lot of us are still being affected by things that happened a long time ago. Not that you don't have the right to, but it's you that's the ones that's still being hurt because you can't forgive. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's a snap of the fingers. I'm not saying that you haven't done everything right, but I am saying you're the one still being burdened. Does that make sense? You're the one still holding on. I know there's relationships, friendships that go on. And somebody said something at a party 3 years ago, and they were wrong, and that was wrong, and they should have never said that, and it's all their fault, and it's still hurting you. They forgot it. It doesn't bother them one bit. The power of unforgiveness. Herodias nursed a grudge, and it killed John the Baptist. I know in the 20, 25, and beyond history, most of us have been hurt by the church relationship. Somebody did something, somewhere, sometime, and they were absolutely wrong and never should have done it. And God should deal with them. But you know who it's affecting today? It's affecting us. It goes bi-weekly that I hear someone referring to something that happened 20, 25 years ago. I don't wish that for you. I wish it didn't happen. They were the ones in wrong. But you're the one that's being hurt. You're the one that's carrying that baggage, that burden. My son said a phrase yesterday. look to my wife, make sure I get this right. He said, the first to apologize is the bravest. The first to forgive is the strongest. And the first to forget is the freest. He told me a story about two ducks. We saw a what is a flock of ducks? Whatever it is. So, you ever seen two ducks fight? I mean, they'll get up. They're quite territorial. And they'll get up against each other, and they'll spread their wings really big. And they'll flap. And they'll take their beaks, and they'll peck. And they'll have it out. And then, if you watch what happens, both ducks will float away. And at some point in time, they will shake it off, and they'll glide away in peace. The power of forgiveness. We are holding on to things that are still weighing us down. And understand, we'll hurt our descendants. We'll carry on and on and on and on. Were you the one abused? Yes, but it's hurting you. Cindy and I were in the ministry for about 10 years. The last stop was Cincinnati. We were the associate ministers there. And it was in a very, very harsh time. And at the end of our ministry, at the time, if you will, we were the most fruitful, we're the fastest growing, and the happiest section of the church. My wife was pregnant with Kendall, and at the same time, studying with 5-6 women, the Bible, etc. I mean, working 12-18. God was blessing her. And at that time, people would sit us down, and they'd say, you're not sharp enough. You don't look the right part. They literally called Cindy the devil, told her she's amazingly prideful, wish you'd never come here. These were people we trained. Okay, that's them. Over it, whatever. Still hurts, but forgiven. At the same time, we were working with a couple in the ministry called Pete and Judy McCreary. Pete and Judy were young, energetic, just great couple. You'd loved them, pure-hearted, and they were in the ministry. But after the time, they went through the same burden. About 4 years ago, we got to see them at Reach in St. Louis. A great conference, international conference. They'll be doing it again in Orlando next year. I highly recommend it. We only got to see Pete and Judy for about 5-10 minutes. But we connected with them in this 5-10 minutes. And said, how you doing? Both of them, you know, they said it to us, we're doing great. Everybody was happy. Everybody knew God had worked. God's will was done. It was great to see them. I was just inspired by that 10 minutes to see that they were able to move on. A year later, Pete was killed in a motorcycle accident by a distracted driver. Pete at the time had 3 daughters and 1 son. Tragic. Very tragic. A year later, they went to court, and the distracted driver, he pled guilty. I did it. I was distracted. It's completely my fault. But when the judge was ready to end the proceedings, they said, Pete's family stood up and said, can we say something? He said, sure. And person by person stood up and started talking about the character of Pete McCreary. Then Pete's brother stood up and said, a year ago I wasn't walking with God, but he said, I want to tell you about Pete. Then he looked over to the man and said, I want you to know today, I forgive you. I forgive you. And if Pete were here, he would forgive you. There were inmates for some reason in the crowd. They were all in tears. In fact, the judge had to take a moment and leave the courtroom because he was so emotionally moved. The courtroom reporter said, I have never seen anything like this in my years covering courtrooms. There was something going on in this courtroom today. You know what that was. Then afterwards, every one of Pete's daughters went up to the distracted driver, hugged him, and said, I forgive you. The power of forgiveness. The power of forgiveness. Holding on to unforgiveness is only wearing you down. But the power of forgiveness can change the world. I want to show a video about Pete, if we can.
He took half of my life. He shattered my heart. He took my present and our future.
A future this family envisioned would be filled with graduations, weddings, mission trips, and service. But the man at the center of it all, Pete McCreary, was taken from his wife and four children too soon.
I never thought I would have to look into the faces of my children and tell them the things I had to tell them that night.
Their father was killed on his way home from work last summer. 24-year-old Logan Rail crashed into McCreary on Westchester Road. McCreary had been riding his motorcycle.
My daughter, worried that her dad was late coming home, followed Find My Friends app and came upon the accident.
In court, family and friends talked about their pain.
The man who killed my father left the biggest hole in my heart that will never be fixed.
But also shared stories of McCreary.
He wasn't just another person. He was the best person I've ever known in my life.
He was a mentor, a man who gave back to the community and always made time for others.
This man that I knew as a close friend had touched so many people in the world.
Above all, Pete McCreary was a family man.
I also grieve the loss of my father's hopes and dreams that he will not get to fulfill because of a distracted driver's mistake.
A driver who apologized today.
I'm just so extremely sorry for what has happened.
He was just an amazing man, and he lost his life early. But Logan, I do want you to know that I forgive you. My brother would forgive you.
And the driver said what happened is going to haunt him for the rest of his life. His attorney made it a point to say what happened was an accident. You know, he wasn't texting, he wasn't drinking, none of that. One thing I do want to share, after the court proceeding in the lobby, I witnessed something so powerful that it brought many people to tears. The daughters, McCreary's daughters, went up to the driver. They hugged him and they comforted him. Just shows you what type of family that is. Reporting live in Westchester, Karen Johnson, WLWT News 5.